Live from the great American Northwest, it's Pro-Libertate Radio, a full-throttle, no-holds-barred examination of the threats to life, liberty, and property. Now, here's our host, author, lecturer, and investigative journalist, William Norman Gregg. Drop what
you're doing! About the only time that people in positions of what they are pleased to call authority ever cavil about the severity of punishment, about the only time when they have any kind of equivocal feelings about clemency versus authoritarian vindictiveness, is when they're dealing with one of their own. This is something that you have to keep in mind, this principle that mercy is for the powerful. And here's a really good example of what I'm talking about. This is something some of you might have seen. It is out of yesterday's Denver Post. There's a video of the incident described in the story, which is available at the blog at lewrockwell.com. I'd heartily recommend that you go and find that. lewrockwell.com, at the right-hand side of the screen, there is a blog section. And I believe last night or early this morning, Ryan McCracken, who's a wonderful guy from Colorado, posted a link with this story from the Denver Post and the relevant video. Denver officials are deeply divided over the proper level of punishment for a police officer who was seen on video tackling and beating a 23-year-old man who was doing nothing but talking on a telephone outside a Lodo nightclub. I believe that's what, Lower Denver? I'm not sure. The video of Officer Devin Sparks repeatedly hitting Michael De Herrera of Denver with a department-issued piece of metal wrapped in leather, I believe that's called a sap, when it's in the hands of somebody other than a government-employed goon in a state-issued costume, that's called a sap. And when it's deployed by somebody who is not clothed in the purported authority of the government ruling us, that is usually considered to be a lethal weapon. Once again, the video of Officer Devin Sparks repeatedly hitting Michael D. Herrera of Denver with a department-issued piece of metal wrapped in leather, picking him up roughly and slamming a car door on his ankle, has prompted independent monitor Richard Rosenthal to push for the firing of Sparks and Corporal Randy Murr, M-U-R-R. Rosenthal, who monitors police internal investigations, maintains Sparks and Murr are unfit for the force because they didn't tell the truth about the April 4th, 2009 incident. Now, that's an important consideration here. They perjured themselves. Perjury is, if I'm not mistaken, a felony. And so the punishment here that is being discussed, this isn't really something that's on the table as the definitive outcome here. This is merely something that's being discussed as the possibility that they would be fired when they should be prosecuted for perjury. Perjury involving a potentially lethal criminal assault. We're not even approaching at this point the issue of what punishment would be appropriate for an armed assault under the color of supposed state authority here. We're talking about whether or not to keep these people on the payroll as tax-subsidized goons. Rosenthal also believes the use of force by Sparks was excessive. It wasn't excessive, it was criminal. It was an unprovoked criminal assault. The Denver City Council earlier this year agreed to pay $17,500 to settle a federal lawsuit brought by De Herrera alleging excessive force, which means, of course, that the taxpayers were hit up in Denver in order to indemnify the criminal actions of Sparks and Murr. De Herrera, in interviews, has described police as beating him unconscious. He said he woke up in a hospital bed with stitches in his head and a swollen head. He said he later was diagnosed with post-concussion syndrome. The video was so important because it showed everything that happened, regardless of reports or what's filled out, De Herrera said in an interview. The video speaks more than any of those words can. He added, "I don't swing. I don't blade. I'm on the phone. The only thing I hold onto is my phone. When I go down, I'm out." And that's when he continues to, quote, "get my compliance." The incident was filmed by the police department's own high-activity location observation video surveillance system. That's HALO, H-A-L-O, high-activity location observation video surveillance system. Video released to the news media by the department shows De Herrera doing nothing but talking on his phone with his father. This is where it gets really ironic. A sheriff's deputy in Pueblo, Rosenthal, in a report to be released on Monday, labels as pure fiction the police report from Sparks that describes his force as justified because De Herrera spun to his left attempting to strike me in the face with a closed right fist. Safety manager Ron Perea, who oversees the police department and has final say on discipline, has rejected Rosenthal's argument that the officer should be fired. He suspended Murr without pay for 3 days for submitting an inaccurate report. It wasn't inaccurate. It was deliberate, perjurious falsehood. It was a felonious act of deliberate dishonesty. It wasn't inaccurate. Sparks also lost 3 days of pay. The video, when viewed in isolation, seems to portray the subject officers as overly aggressive for the situation, Perea said. There is no audio, and it appears that there is a man on the phone ignoring but not being overly aggressive toward the officer. Forgive me, the word was overtly aggressive toward the officer when the officer takes him down. The video, however, does not tell the entire story. Okay, what would be the proper context here? There's nothing in that video that sustains the fabrication which was offered by these two officers. Perea said a witness said De Herrera pushed another officer moments earlier and that Sparks feared De Herrera was about to strike him. Oh, goodness gracious me, where is the fainting couch? And that's the thing, they're bullies. Bullies are cowards. Officer safety, uber alle, that's all they care about here. This guy posed no threat at all whatsoever to anybody. He was talking on the phone, as it happens, to another law enforcement officer, his father in Pueblo. When he was blindsided, thrown to the ground, beaten repeatedly, then handcuffed behind his back, and then lifted by his handcuffed hands, his handcuffed wrists, this idiot in uniform shoved his hand through the handcuffed wrists and levered him off the ground, which, of course, is the sort of thing that can result in a shoulder dislocation. And then he threw him up against the back of a squad car and then inserted him into the squad car and then slammed, and you can see in the video that it's an act of deliberate malice, slammed this guy's ankle in the car door. That's the context here. While it is clear from the HALO camera that he is on the phone and does not appear ready to hit the officer, from the officer's position, he was confronting someone already known to have assaulted one officer, who then pulled his arm back at the shoulder with a closed fist. Actually, it says fit here, but I believe fist is the appropriate word. Perea lied, and it says wrote, but we're talking about a lie. De Herrera was talking on the phone with his father at 12:14 a.m. when the incident occurred. The police have taken into custody De Herrera's friend, Sean Johnson, then 24, after he used a women's restroom and was ejected from a nightclub. De Herrera said he feared for his friend's safety. I mean, why not? The guy was on the ground, surrounded by armed strangers, and was asking for advice from his father, a Pueblo sheriff's deputy. Both Johnson and De Herrera were charged by police with interference and resisting arrest, neither of which, by the way, is a crime. Resisting arrest is a common law right in many circumstances, and this is a really good example of a perfect opportunity, or perfect situation, rather, in which to exercise that common law right. Assistant City Attorney Vince DeCrosi moved to dismiss the charges after reviewing the video because there is no likelihood of conviction. The clash between Rosenthal and Perea follows Perea's hiring in June to replace the former safety manager, Al LaCable. LaCable and Rosenthal took a similar approach to discipline decisions and rarely disagreed on how to handle an officer's actions. I believe if we dig into that story, and I intend to, we'll discover that the reason why Perea was appointed was because of pressure from the Tax Feeders Union, meaning, of course, the Armed Tax Feeders Union, the local police union. Most likely they wanted somebody who took a more officer-friendly perspective to matters of discipline here. What this story doesn't describe, but what is seen in the video, and please go to LouRockwell.com, the blog, and look for Ryan McCracken's item on this. is that this Halo camera, which was operated in real time by somebody sitting in a Minority Report-style Orwellian facility somewhere, when this guy started to beat on this innocent kid, the camera panned away. The camera panned away so as not to get the details of the criminal assault in sufficient volume, most likely, to bring about prosecution of this officer. In real time, this guy was dishonestly editing the video so as to protect this guy from incrimination. Now, first of all, think about the fact that these Halo cameras exist. Think about the fact that they are apparently being monitored in real time. Those two facts alone are terrifying. But into that mix, throw the fact that the people on the other end of that camera are deliberately manipulating the record in order to protect acts of criminal violence by government law enforcement agents. Now let's all repeat with Lee Greenwood that we're proud to be Americans, where at least we know we're free. It's obscene. This is Will Grigg, Pro Libertate Radio, 866-986-6397. We'll be right back. If you go to lewrockwell.com right now, and you go to the blog section, you have to click on the word that says blog, pan down to the item with the headline, Denver Police Officer Assaults Man for Talking on Phone, which was submitted by Ryan W. McCacken. Forgive me, McMacken. McMacken is his name. I consistently and persistently mispronounce his name. It's Ryan W. McMacken. And he is a resident of Colorado, a very good writer, occasional contributor here to lewrockwell.com. I think a great deal of him. His commentary is the following. The brutality exhibited by the police in this video was so unwarranted, so vicious, and so totally despicable that not even the usual defend the police no matter what automatons are putting up a fight in the comments section. That is the comments section to the article in the Denver Post. Of course, the safety manager maintains that the fine officer who obviously assaults a man for absolutely nothing deserves to keep his job. Once again, the discussion here is not whether this guy should be permitted to keep his job, whether he should continue to batten on the taxpayers as an armed parasite. The question is, shouldn't this guy be prosecuted for felonious assault? That's not even being discussed right now. The question is whether this guy will continue to be an armed welfare queen. Before the video was discovered, the police simply made up a story. The assaulted bystander was trying to strike the police officer, which is the sort of thing that they will say in any circumstance where force is used and there are disputes over whether that force was legitimate. They'll just simply pull something out of the nearest malodorous bodily orifice and submit it as the truth. They lie all the damn time. The DPD, however, believes that police who lie and attack the public unprovoked should be kept on the force. Your tax dollars at work. Then Mr. McMacken offers the following comment. Note also how the video camera being operated by a police force employee immediately pans away from the action after it becomes apparent that excessive force is being used. And that goes back to the point I was making here about real-time Orwellian rectification of the record. Now, there is a big controversy, and it shouldn't be a controversy at all, over the question of video or audio recording police in the course of their duties. Police, as public employees who are wearing insignia of the government that employs them, have no presumption of privacy in their official capacity. Radley Balko of Reason Magazine wrote an article about this recently and interviewed a police spokesman who said, oh, you've got to understand, police don't surrender their civil rights at the station house door. Yeah, they do. They're not entitled to privacy. That particular, it's not a civil right, it's an individual right. Civil rights have to do with the political system. That particular right is one that they abdicate when they become the uniformed representatives of a government that is supposed to be accountable to the people. Everything they do in that capacity should be subject to the unstinting and unlimited scrutiny of the people who authorize, supposedly, these people in uniform to act on their behalf. About 4 years ago, I started following this issue and writing about it in my blog, Pro Libertate, about the issue of recording, that is to say, videotaping, audio taping, or otherwise recording the actions of police, and how one of the common tactics being used now is to torment wiretapping statutes in such a way that it becomes a supposed criminal offense to make a record, a video or audio record, of a police officer in the performance of his duty. And we're always told that these records might be adulterated when they're posted on YouTube or other file-sharing sites, when they're submitted to the conventional media, when they're used in civil or criminal proceedings. We don't have a chain of custody of these recordings. They can't be considered reliable. And that's why we have dash cam records anyway, and why we have other surveillance video recordings of police activity. That's all true. The funny thing, as Balko pointed out, and I think in the next segment I'll go and find the relevant quotes for you, there are many, 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 many situations in which dash cam videos mysteriously disappear. Here's a really good example of that. Anybody who's seen the 1993 footage of the original February 28th raid on the Branch Davidian congregation at Mount Carmel, Texas, anybody who's seen footage of that raid recognizes that we're brought into that incident when it's already degenerated into a firefight. We don't see the initial assault on the Branch Davidian Church. What was said in the course of the trial of the Branch Davidians, were put on trial for conspiring to murder federal officers, that is to say the federal goons who attacked their church and their home. But what we're told is that they fired out through a closed door and struck ATF raiders as they swarmed this so-called compound. Remember, compound is the word described that is used to describe your home anytime it comes under assault by armed agents of the government. You could live in a wiki-up, you could live in a yurt, you could live in an igloo, you could live in a tar paper shack. As a matter of fact, the Randy Weaver family lived in sort of a glorified tar paper shack. But the instant that the government decides to attack your home, it becomes an armed compound. Well, what we were told is that the Branch Davidians fired out through a closed door as their armed compound came under assault. That door, mysteriously, although it survived the fire on April 19th, that door disappeared. We were told that there was a videotape of the initial assault, which supposedly would corroborate this remarkable story, that these people had shot blindly through a closed door and struck several officers. Well, you know what? That videotape disappeared as well. There were disappearing videotapes at Oklahoma City on April 19th, 1995. There are disappearing videotapes of the September 11th attacks that show, purportedly, various angles of what happened in ways that would corroborate the official account. But those videotapes mysteriously disappear. There is a case in Wisconsin in which every dash cam video taken of police involved in a controversial use of force mysteriously disappeared. And in this case in Denver, in real time, the chair-moistening police department drone who was operating this Halo camera panned away as this goon in uniform was beating this hapless 23-year-old kid. He panned away from this. Rather than collecting evidence, he adulterated the record in real time. This is right out of what Winston Smith was doing in Orwell's 1984. He was going through and rectifying the record, excising from back issues of the official regime's newspaper anything that contradicted the existing line, the existing party line. He was changing the past in order to dignify and validate the party line in the present. And that's the same kind of thing that was happening here in this incident in Denver. And once again, I find it so striking that for all the conversations that are being held over the question of what's going to be done with respect to the employment of this guy, this police officer, Devin Sparks, and his cohort, Randy Murr, there's no discussion here of actually prosecuting them for felonious assault under the color of supposed law. And that brings us back once again to the proposition that mercy, that clemency, that compassion, tolerance, moderation, these are things that are the exclusive blessing of people who are already powerful. In our system, we don't have those of us who are not people who are in the ruling class, particularly in the enforcement arm thereof, we don't have the right to expect mercy. We don't have the right to expect moderation. Here's another really good example of that. This case literally makes me sick. A Texas asthma sufferer who went to California for a medical marijuana recommendation and then got busted in June on a Texas highway with small amounts of marijuana and hashish is facing up to life in prison after being indicted by a Brown County grand jury. He is charged with possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver, a first-degree felony. First-degree felony in the Lone Star State. 20-year-old Chris Diaz, asthma sufferer, jailed on a $40,000 bond, life in prison because he had about an ounce of these controlled substances in his pocket. You know, mercy is not for the weak, mercy is only for the strong. This is Will Grigg, Pro Libertate Radio, 866-986-6397. We'll be back in just a minute. Like to say, and this music cue offers an irresistible hook, this is something much worse than a mere misunderstanding here. This is from Radley Balko's blog, The Agitator, theagitator.com. The item is entitled, When Police Videos Go Missing. When I interviewed him for my column this week, Fraternal Order of Police Executive Director Jim Pasco differentiated citizen shot video from police dash cam and surveillance video this way, quote, how do you know the video hasn't been edited? How do we know what's in the video hasn't been taken out of context? With dashboard cameras or police security video, the evidence is in the hands of law enforcement the entire time, so it's admissible under the rules of evidence. That's not the case with these cell phone videos. Now think about that for just a second. What he is saying is that only the police can make the police accountable. That they have a monopoly on accountability, that they are uniquely qualified to be a judge in their own case. Not even Thomas Hobbes, those of you who are familiar with Thomas Hobbes, he was, I think, probably the most influential British voice on behalf of authoritarian government, what he called the Leviathan. His social contract theory dictates that in order to spare us from the anarchic violence that is our lot in the commons, where life is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. That sounds like a law firm, doesn't it? So, the law firm of solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. We're an accounting firm. But in order to protect us from the anarchic violence that otherwise would be our lot, we surrender rights to a paternalistic government that draws power, draws legitimacy from this arrangement. In order to protect us, it takes our freedom. But not even Thomas Hobbes, if you read Leviathan, not even Thomas Hobbes believes that people can be judges in their own cause. Here's somebody who believes, or who believed, I think he'd know better now that he's dead, somebody who believed in the bottomless legitimacy of government, that government has apparently an inexhaustible reservoir of legitimate power. Not even he believes that state functionaries could be judges in their own cause. He believed in dividing, to a certain extent, compartmentalizing, dividing powers of government so as to keep people at least somewhat accountable. Here you've got the proposition that only the quote-unquote evidence which is in the hands of law enforcement is admissible under the rules of evidence. And that's not entirely true, by the way. At least it shouldn't be true. In terms of the standard rules of evidence, if you can establish the legitimacy of something that is a privately produced record, it is admissible in evidence, such as a diary, for instance, that sort of thing. You have to establish chain of custody. But in this case, what he's saying is that ab ovo, if you will, from its very origins, something which is not produced by the police is inadmissible, and that's nonsense. But that's what he expects somebody who's a capo of the mobbed-up police officers union to be saying in defense of his criminal syndicate. Pasco may be right, continues Balko, about the potential for citizen-shot video to be edited, though from what I understand, that's pretty easy to detect. The problem with Pasco's statement is that there are too many stories where dash cam and surveillance camera video has gone missing, particularly in cases where there's alleged police misconduct. Now, I had adverted to one of these in the previous segment, but I had misstated the location of this particular scandal. I said that this was in Wisconsin. As it turns out, this is something that happened in Nashville, Tennessee. There are bullet point items now from Balco's column that I'll share with you. The Tennessean reports on its front page today, this was a couple of days ago, that 1,300 dash cam videos from the Nashville Police Department have been erased. The police department blames the video camera vendor. The vendor blames the police department. More disturbing, DUI defense attorneys interviewed by the paper who had sought video of their clients' arrests were told by the police department that the videos didn't exist, not that they had been erased. There's actually the second story about missing or edited dash cam video to make news. That's actually, he says, the second story about missing or edited dash cam video to make news this week. The other is about a pregnant illegal immigrant who was arrested 2 years ago for a minor traffic violation, jailed, then, in a cruel practice that seems to be more common than I'd thought, was forced to give birth while shackled. The officer who made the unusual arrest claimed there was no video of the incident. The woman's lawyers were finally able to obtain the video last week, though portions of it are missing. The video opens with the officer telling the woman that his camera is running. They always lie. We can assume that they will lie because they can. And they expect to be able to get away with it. I noted, continues Balco, in the column, the case of Jack McKenna, the University of Maryland student whose beating at the hands of riot police after a basketball game last year was captured by several cell phones, but was mysteriously missing from the footage taken by a police surveillance camera pointed at the spot where the beating took place. The police officer in charge of the campus surveillance system is married to one of the officers who was disciplined in the McKenna case. Let me reread once again what this tax, fat, and hyena from the Fraternal Order of Police said. How do you know that the video hasn't been edited? How do we know what's in the video hasn't been taken out of context? With dashboard cameras or police security video, the evidence is in the hands of law enforcement the entire time, so it's admissible under the rules of evidence. That's not the case with these cell phone videos. Well, here's a case in Maryland where the cell phone videos were the only existing record because the law enforcement people in charge of the surveillance camera video edited out the assault, the criminal assault, on this innocent kid. If the cell phones hadn't been there, there would have been no record. And for people possessed of an Orwellian mindset, that means that it never happened. In another example, also from Prince George's County, Maryland, which is a horrible place to live, by the way, in April 2005, TV reporter Andrea McCarran, and a cameraman were pulled over by seven police cruisers as they followed a county official for a story on the misuse of public funds. McCarran later claimed in a lawsuit that she was abused during the stop, resulting in a torn rotator cuff and dislocated shoulder. Prince George's County officials never gave McCarran's attorneys dash cam video of the incident. Their excuse? They said all seven dashboard cameras were malfunctioning on the day McCarran was pulled over. It's odd how that happens. Last year, Birmingham police beat an already unconscious driver after he crashed during a high-speed police chase. One officer turned the dash camera off in mid-beating. The police department then gave the district attorney's office a version of that video with the police beating edited out. It had been rectified in Orwellian fashion. In March, Justice Leanne, I believe it's pronounced Dauphineau, on Texas's second court of appeals noted in a dissent the troubling frequency with which potentially exonerating dash camera footage seems to turn up missing. Repeatedly, she wrote, we are asked to review records of DWI stops during which there is no audio or video record of the event. Why do I believe there should be audio or audio and video record of the DWI stops? Because the law requires, and did so at the time of this stop, either an audio or audio and video record or the filing of a racial profiling report for each stop. And then she offers a citation here. The city of Fort Worth has conscientiously provided the means for complying with this law. an appellate court should give no weight to testimony that is disproved by the objective record of the actual events. And I believe that the majority should address the issue of an officer's intentionally disabling the audio recorder and testifying directly contrary to the audio record. Oh, there's an interesting judicial innovation. If we catch the police officer perjuring himself, we shouldn't give weight to his testimony. Now, as far as the police unions are concerned, that's unacceptable. That's perfectly unacceptable. Police perjury should be considered normative. At some point, continues Judge Dauphineau, courts must address the repeated failure of officers to use the recording equipment and the repeated inability to remember whether the car they were driving on patrol or to a DWI stop contained the video equipment the city of Fort Worth has been paying for. If the law requires recording to qualify for the exception to filing racial profiling reports, then is the officer not obligated to make sure that there is tape in a traditional video camera or that a digital camera is activated? When the actual recording conflicts with the officer's testimony, the defendant's testimony, or another witness's testimony, a court cannot pretend that the emperor is wearing new clothes just because someone testifies that he is. And then Balco comments, it's commendable that more and more police departments are using dash cameras. I'm less enthusiastic about the increasing government surveillance of public spaces, but neither is a compelling reason to prevent citizens from protecting themselves by making their own recordings of their interactions with on-duty police officers. My position is as follows. You have to make recordings of what police officers do. You simply have to do it. If you don't, you're going to get hurt. You cannot trust armed strangers in government-issued costumes. Simply can't do it. This is Will Grigg, Pro Libertate Radio on the Liberty News Radio Network, 866-986-6397. We'll be back at you in just a minute.
System memory crash.
Now, back to our host, author, lecturer, and investigative journalist, William Norman Grigg.
1-866-986-6397, 866-986-6397, here on the Liberty News Radio Network. I've been talking about the imperative necessity of recording every interaction you have, if you have the means to do so, with those friendly people in government-issued costumes, because unless you do so, chances are, if you have some kind of a dispute, if you end up being arrested for reasons that simply make no sense, if you end up being abused, which is a very common and increasingly common occurrence, if you have nothing but your own word and the word of another mundane, that is to say somebody who is not decked out in the habiliments of the state's punitive priesthood, you're not going to have any chance of achieving justice. Andrew Napolitano, who before he decided to make an honest living as an author, was employed as a federal judge, and in spite of that background, actually displays a great deal of respect for the Constitution, making him a blessed anomaly in the ranks of judges, both active and retired, likes to say that the cell phone is the new gun, which is to say it's the new weapon, the new go-to weapon for self-defense against abuse by police officers. The thing is, they're treated as if they are literal guns. The possession of a cell phone by somebody who's either involved in the confrontation with the police or somebody who's at the periphery making an independent record is treated as a criminal offense, and it is not a criminal offense. There are some states where it is treated as if it were a type of wiretapping, and this, of course, is utterly contrived and thoroughly dishonest. But where there is no black-letter law justifying the treatment of recording police officers in the course of their duties as if it were a crime, these people will simply make something up. Here's a really good example of the same. When a deputy sheriff began questioning Melissa Greenfield's boyfriend at a Delaware County truck stop in Ohio, she began recording video with her cell phone. She never thought that she or her phone could be viewed as a danger while she documented the activities of public employees in a public place. I'm a 115-pound, 20-year-old girl wearing a cervical collar with nothing but a cell phone. I was not going to harm any officer, Greenfield said today. This is from the 29th of July, the Columbus Dispatch. However, a sheriff's sergeant saw the situation differently after Greenfield announced she was recording video for legal purposes and our own safety. Sergeant Jonathan Burke wrote that he repeatedly ordered Greenfield to place the unknown object in her pocket and keep her hands free. By the way, ordered is the verb here. That reflects the martial law mindset. He's wearing a government-issued costume. You're not. You're supposed to take orders from him. It doesn't work that way in a free society. He had no authority to issue orders of any kind. She was not a criminal suspect. She did not present a danger to him by any rational calculation. He had no right to order her to do anything. When Greenfield refused, which was her right, she was arrested and charged with obstructing official business and resisting arrest. How often do we find people bootstrapping that particular charge in any situation? You're arrested for resisting arrest. Burke wrote in his report that he feared that Greenfield could have been holding a dangerous object such as a cell phone gun. However, neither the sheriff's office nor the Columbus office of the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, forgive me, it's now the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, has ever come across one of the black market devices that apparently are made in Eastern Europe. Burke ultimately determined that Greenfield's cell phone was not the exotic stuff of James Bond, but a simple T-Mobile device. In a statement, Delaware County Sheriff Walker L. Davis III said that cell phone guns are an example of everyday items that have been altered into deceptive weapons that endanger the safety of officers and the public. It's a deceptive phone, in other words. When a sheriff's deputy encounters an individual holding something in his or her hand, the deputy will take action to identify the item. She'd identified it already. It's a cell phone. This is done for the safety of the deputy, the involved parties, and the public, Davis lied, says Davis wrote, but he's lying. This is not done for the safety of the public. This is done because pants-wetting cowards on the public payroll demand that we be perfectly helpless in their presence. Officer safety is the prime directive. It is their entire worldview. And anything that is taken as the assertion of any kind of independence on the part of those of us who are mere mundanes is considered a threat, particularly if it involves accountability. Ah, then it's not a threat to their lives, it's a threat to their livelihoods. After Greenfield got her phone back, she said the video she took of the deputies at the Flying J truck stop on I-71 and Route 37 on July 9th had been deleted along with a couple of vacation videos. That's just standard operating procedure as well. You see, only police and other law enforcement officials can maintain the chain of custody of video or photographic evidence. This is why they delete things that are taken by those of us who are not part of their exalted little cadre. Deputies did not delete any of the video, Davis lied, says Davis said, I'm editing it to reflect reality. A warrant would have been required to search the phone, and one was not obtained, he said. That much is an admission against interest. The sheriff's cruisers are not equipped with dashboard recording systems, so there is no public video to document what occurred. That's nonsense. They have to be equipped with dashboard recording systems. However, after landing a grant, more than 30 cruisers soon will have cameras. I mean, that means, in other words, they'll have better cameras. I don't believe that there's any jurisdiction in this country, outside perhaps of a couple of fly-spec jurisdictions in darkest Appalachia, where cruisers are not equipped with some kind of recording devices. In Delaware Municipal Court on July 13th, Greenfield's public defender deemed it ridiculous that she had a cell phone gun. The woman from Poway, California, pleaded no contest to obstructing official business. She was fined $20 and released with time served, 3 days in jail. She was kidnapped at gunpoint and detained for 3 days for having a cell phone. Greenfield said her plea was one of convenience to allow her to return home to receive treatment for her neck, which had been injured in a car wreck a few days earlier. She and her boyfriend were driving back to California when their truck ran low on gasoline, and they pulled into the truck stop. Colton Dorich, 19, of Conover, Wisconsin, began walking his dog along Route 37 while displaying a sign asking passing motorists for money, triggering a call to the sheriff's office. What a thoughtful thing to do. If you're not going to give them money, why are you going to call the police? Punitive populism at work, people. Don't get the police involved if you get the police involved, no good will come of it. There are situations where they're going to get involved. That's inevitable. Why borrow trouble? Burke arrived, questioned Dorch, and then accompanied him back to his truck so he could get his ID. Burke wrote that Greenfield began to intervene and asked Dorch, who was not charged, for her cell phone. Not knowing what the item in her hand was and having prior knowledge of all types of hidden weapons, including a cell phone gun, I asked her several times to place it in her pocket and to keep her hands free, Burke wrote. Oh my gosh, wrote in crayon. Greenfield said that while driving her to jail, Burke said that it was, quote, unacceptable for me to be filming his activities. I wish I could be surprised, she said, but I've heard so many stories of incidents like this happening before. There's no law against videotaping police encounters. Well, there isn't, but it was unacceptable. And because he considered it unacceptable, he arrested her, which is to say that he abducted her at gunpoint. She ended up being held for 3 days in the Stygian little detention facility in the local county jail. For nothing. It's because this pants-wetting bully of a coward demanded that she turn over her cell phone, thinking that she was perhaps some really cunningly disguised agent of Smersh. Honestly, these are the depraved fantasies, the paranoid delusions. You can't even call them conspiracy theories, because to be a theory, it has to be more systematic, it has to be more rational. These are the deranged, paranoid delusions of the armed people on the government payroll who are supposed to be protecting us, supposedly, and they call us paranoid? That's a really interesting proposition here. A few years ago, I came across, actually quite a few years ago, about 15 or 16 years ago, I came across a quote by a fellow named Tony Cooper from Dallas, Texas, and he teaches law enforcement officers in the art of hostage negotiation. I'm not even sure that's taught anymore. It seems to be that standard operating procedure now was to destroy everything within a given perimeter and then consider the hostages to be collateral damage. But he was involved in teaching the art of hostage negotiation. He was the one who said that there is a conspiracy theory, his phrase, that's taken hold among law enforcement, both federal and local, to the effect that people are plotting against the government. I'm paraphrasing now as accurately as I can from memory. The people are plotting against the government unless forceful, decisive action is taken to stamp out this conspiracy, that the whole system is going to break down. He wrote that in 1995, if I remember correctly. And I think that was just after Oklahoma City. That was 15 years ago. I don't think things have gotten better in the interval. As a matter of fact, that seems to be more or less the common perception of the people ruling us. Unless they keep us under their thumb, if they hammer us down, anytime any of us displays a tremor of independence, terrible things will ensue. Thus ends hour one of Pro Libertate Radio on the Liberty News Radio Network. 866-986-6397 is our call-in number. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes for hour two, so stick around.